You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 19 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the last two matches against Aston Villa and Wolfsburg. We're looking at a penalty shootout defeat for the reserves, and we'll be joined by a Fulham fan to look ahead to Saturday's trip to Craven Cottage.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to the latest episode of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and yes, I'm joined by Dan and Dov, as I am every week. How are we guys this week?
I'm good, thanks, Steve. Just been out Christmas shopping, got most of it done. How about you, Dov? You all right?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I've not done any Christmas shopping, though. Did you get anything nice, or are you not allowed to see?
I got the girlfriend a little something, and got my mother a little bit as well, so yeah, it's going all right.
Not bad. I'm a typical man. I'm leaving it till the last minute, as everybody should. It's much more fun. It's exciting as well.
We'll call it exciting, but...
Yeah. It's just that you don't know what you're going to get, because everything could be sold out, so...
What, like potluck?
Basically, yeah.
Steve, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all good. Christmas shopping's all done, all sorted, so yeah, not too bad. But well, guys, we'll start by looking back at the, well, disappointing defeat to Aston Villa on Saturday. Dan, poor result, wasn't it? And I guess all the more disappointing when you consider that Chelsea, earlier on in the day, had slipped up as well, so the win would have taken us level on points, but that's all in hindsight now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Villa defended very well, but we just couldn't break them down. I thought Rooney was bitterly disappointing throughout the game. He had one chance where he hit the bar, which he probably should have scored, but apart from that, he didn't really do much. He was working hard, but it just wasn't coming off for him. I thought the starting lineup was a bit dodgy as well. When I got to the ground and realised that Park was playing on the left, it was a bit sort of, you know, people were wondering why has he done that, because it's Aston Villa. It's not like we're playing, you know, away in Europe. I think Overton could have had a game. He wasn't even on the bench, was he? I think we just needed some pace to get him behind Villa, but it didn't happen all game.
Dov, I mean, Dan mentioned the formation there. I mean, one up front at home against Aston Villa. I know we've been winning recently with that 4-5-1 system, but at home to a team where we should be on the front foot. I know Aston Villa are in good form. They're challenging for the top four this season, but surely Michael Owen scores a hat-trick midweek and he must be thinking, how don't I get the nod?
Yeah, no, I think maybe the thinking regards the formation would have been the defence, because you had Darren Fletcher at right back, Wes Brown not fully fit, Vidic obviously coming back after having the flu. So I think he was maybe using that five-man midfield to kind of protect the back four as such. Never worked. So we need to try something new. But I can see where you're coming from. You want, obviously, you're at home, you want to attack the sort of away team. And especially since Villa hadn't beat us for about 55,000 years at Old Trafford, you would have expected us to go out, but I just think it was because of the sort of defensive reshuffling that he had to do, so he wanted to protect the defence.
Dan, for the goal, I mean, I suppose the blame sort of lies with Wes Brown, doesn't it? I mean, Fletcher could have got a bit tighter to Ashley Young, but when you've got a tricky winger, it's difficult, isn't it, to stop the cross. But then again, Agbon Lahor nipped in front of Wes Brown and it was 1-0.
Well, I disagree with you there a little bit, Steve. I mean, we know as fans that Ashley Young's pure right foot, isn't he, really? Fletcher must know that, but he showed him onto his right foot. He did it time and time again, and they did it on the other side with Downing, who's all left foot. They kept showing him inside onto his left foot, and I was just thinking, do they not realise, or is it just something that I've picked up on? Obviously, they must know, but I don't understand why you wouldn't force him onto the weaker foot.
Ashley Young, surely he's the sort of tricky winger, good enough winger to be able to go both ways. I mean, he's good enough on his left foot. You show him inside, he's likely to go outside. I mean, I disagree. I think there's not a lot you can do when you're up against a winger who's that good and who really is really hard to play. I mean, even if it had been a Gary Neville or a John O'Shea in there, I think they'd have had problems as well. And for the goal, Dan, I mean, any blame for Wes Brown? Personally, I wouldn't blame Darren Fletcher. I know Ashley Young sort of got past him and and managed to get the cross in. And you do tell your fullback, try and stop the cross, but I don't think there's a lot he could have done with that. And then Agbon Lahore sort of nipped in front of Brown and headed it in for 1-0. But do you blame Brown for that?
Yeah, Brown was very sloppy. I mean, he was touch tight with Agbon Lahore, and as soon as he played the ball off, he lost him, didn't he? He just switched off. Maybe that's just through lack of games or whatever, or lack of quality, I don't know. But, I mean, you're saying about Ashley Young. I mean, I'd rather see Fletcher push Young out wide a bit more, get him to the byline and cross it rather than coming inside on his right foot. But I just think that it's a harder ball to defend against, maybe, you know, if it's in the right area anyway. But I thought Kuzak possibly could have read it, but, I mean, I think I might just be a bit harsh on Kuzak there.
I think you are, Dan. Come on, Kuzak had a decent game. It didn't do anything too bad, and it couldn't really do too much. He was more let down by Wes Brown for the goal.
Vidic looks pretty shaky all throughout the game, though, really. I thought Vidic didn't look particularly match fit.
That's because he was coming up against pace, Dan. He doesn't like pace.
Well, there's a guy behind who sits behind me, and he's like, every time Rio Ferdinand doesn't play alongside him, he just slates Vidic. He says, like, you know, that he can't seem to play without him. I'm starting to come to see what you're saying, really, because I think Ferdinand sort of assures him that he's as good as Vidic and he's there to help him out if he needs be. But I don't think he gets that feeling with Wes Brown.
No, I just think like Fernando Torres has sort of found him out on God knows how many occasions, and I think just basically any striker that'll come up. Like he'll come up against and he'll run at him. He's like a rabbit in headlights when that happens. And maybe that's just one of his weaknesses. Not that he's got many, but that's probably one of them, I'd say.
Well, prior to the Aston Villa defeat, guys, a much more impressive performance against Wolfsburg in the Champions League. Dan, fantastic result, wasn't it, given the defensive problems we had. Secured top spot in the group as well, which was a bonus. And a Michael Owen hat-trick to top it all off as well.
Yeah, I thought we did play very well. I was impressed with Carrick and Evra. I thought Fletcher looked a little bit suspect, so to speak. But, I mean, I thought that, in general, the team played really well. Obviously, Owen leading the line on his own did fairly well getting the three goals. Wolfsburg in the first half could have been a few goals ahead, if we're being honest. But the way that we stuck at it, I thought it was really good. I thought Anderson had a really good game against Wolfsburg. Didn't really do so much against Villa at the weekend, but against Wolfsburg, I think he was one of our standout performers. And he just needs to find that consistency now. So he's really starting to annoy me.
Oh, the wrath of the big man is coming out. I quite enjoyed it.
I just think that, you know, against Wolfsburg, he put in a really good performance. His passing was pretty decent. His work rate was good. And then against Villa, he just didn't seem to really be able to string two passes together. There's a lot of theory about him not being able to play in a midfield too. When you look at it, his best games have been when we've had three central midfielders anyway.
The thing that annoys me about Anderson is the lack of consistency. I mean, he'll have an absolute blinder one game, and then you'll get five games where Anderson's just average. And to be honest, we've got to stop saying that his age is the excuse, really. I mean, when is he going to start stepping up and sort of consistently performing? Because he's got the ability. He's proved he's got the ability. It's just about finding that consistent level.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I just think that there's some parts of his game. Like he's very pacey. He's strong on the ball. But I think his decision-making sometimes just lacks a little bit. Obviously, with Harvey coming back soon as well, he's going to have a fight on his hands to stay in the first 11, I think.
What did you think about Nani? Like, obviously, he got a game against Wolfsburg, which, well, that's become an even rarer occurrence, him even getting on the park, never mind the bench. Do you think his days are numbered and all? Yous aren't very big fans of him. I mean, do you think that's him on his way to summer?
I thought Nani played well against Wolfsburg. He worked hard. He was up and down the left wing quite a lot, wasn't he? He obviously put the ball in for Owen's first goal. Don't think he could have done much more, really, by scoring a goal. But like you say, he weren't even in the squad on Saturday. I'm thinking he might get a game against Wolves. I hope he does anyway.
Dom, I mean, just looking ahead to the draw for the last 16, potentially, these are the teams we could face. I mean, we've got Bayern Munich, Milan, Lyon, Stuttgart, Porto, Inter or Olympiacos, I think that's correct. Looking at those, obviously the standout teams are the Bayern, Milan, Lyon and Inter. I guess those are the sort of four that we want to avoid. But Stuttgart, Porto and Olympiacos, we'd really fancy our chances there, wouldn't we?
Oh yeah, to be fair, I think we'd fancy our chances against Bayern Munich and Milan as well. Milan are a bit slow. Inter, depends what day you get them on, to be honest. If you get them on a good day, then it'll be a tough game. Tough couple of games like it was last season. If you get them on a bad day, I think we'd... should get through them pretty easily enough, but I fully expect us to get through the quarterfinals easily.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Okay, well, let's move on to look at the Cabbage and Player of the Week now then, guys. Dov, I'll start with you, and we'll start with the Player of the Week. Who is it for you this week?
I've been waiting all short to mention it. It's got to be Sir Ryan Giggs for winning the BBC Sports Personality of the Year 2009. He's my Player of the Week, just because he's a fantastic player. And he's just walking away with another bunch of awards. I think he got awarded the Welsh Personality as well, so... Just another couple of trophies to put on his little cabinet for him. So, yeah, he's my player.
That's a good choice. Dan, I'm going to give it to Michael Owen for his hat-trick against Wolfsburg. Who are you going to give it to this week?
Patrice Evra. I think that against Wolfsburg he was good. You know, played slightly out of position. And I thought against Aston Villa at the weekend, I thought he was our top performer, really. Yeah, so I think Evra deserves the praise.
Okay, and on to Cabbage. Dan, start with you.
It's a tough one. I've got two people in my head, but I think I'm going to go with Ji-sung Park. I know he's not played a lot of games recently and all that, but I thought he was pretty average against Aston Villa. No pace. His movement's pretty good. His running's all right, but I just think that he looked a bit out of his depth. Like I say, it might have just been down to his lack of fitness and lack of games, but yeah, Ji-sung Park for me.
Dog?
I'm going to give it to Senior Wayne Rooney for his rubbish attempt at a dive, which he was given a yellow card for. But come on, if he's got to dive, he's got to do it better than that. So he's my cabbage for this week.
It was a blatant dive as well. Like, I don't know how you get away with that.
With the chance he hit the bar with as well. I mean, Wayne Rooney would surely have expected himself to have scored from that position. I know it was a difficult chance, but 9 times out of 10, he'd have probably stuck that away. So
well, I mean, I think he hit it too well, didn't he? I think. Yeah. I mean, if he'd have scuffed it, he'd probably gone rolled in the bottom corner or whatever. But he got too much on it, really. But good effort, good first touch. You know, the finish was a little bit wayward. What about you, Steve, anyway?
It's got to be Anderson for me this week, which is a shame, really, because he was so good. Well, wasn't fantastically good against Wolfsburg, but I thought he was one of the better performers. But then, like we say, against Aston Villa, he was just not really in it, was he? And his passing just wasn't there. He just needs to find that consistency, because he has got the potential. It's just about fulfilling it now. So, yeah, it's Anderson for me this week. Well, it's reserves review time now. It's been a couple of weeks off for the reserves as they haven't had any games, but they did play this evening. Dov, lost on penalties, didn't we, to Bolton Wanderers, I believe?
Well, we did indeed, Steve. The reserves were playing in the Manchester Senior Cup against Bolton Wanderers at the County Ground this evening. But unfortunately, Bolton won 3-2 on penalties after 2-2 during normal time. Let's sort of talk about the game, tell everybody what happened. Yeah, the first start for midfielder Paul Pogba. He scored, and also Nicky Adjosi scored as well, who also set up Paul Pogba's first goal. United took the lead in 11 minutes. Magnus Ekrem had a magnificent free kick and basically found Pogba, who was unmarked, and he directed the ball to the far corner with his right knee. A bit of an unorthodox finish, but what a great way to introduce yourself to the reserve setup. Bottom note, they drew level after 12 minutes, basically a minute later. Adjosi, he was dispossessed in his own half. Bottom player Aaron Mooy, I think his name was, or Moy, I don't know. He sort of just smashed a 25-yard effort, which went just inside the far post. Ben Amos was a bit helpless, so that sort of made it 1-1. Basically, it was a bit of a end-to-end game after that, and on 48 minutes, Bolton took the lead when Top Obadiah, he basically just sort of powered past Sean McGinty and Oliver Gill and then just smashed the shot inside the near post. So that was Bolton up 2-1. United then were sort of on the back foot for the last little bit of the game, but there was a finish from Nicky Adjosi, who basically restored parity on 54 minutes. Oliver Norwood, he sort of picked up a superb pass to Pogba, who then helped it on, and Adjosi steadied himself and he just smashed the ball in inside the far post. A nice low shot there. So that was 2-2. Bolton, basically, they upped their tempo and they should have really have taken, sort of won the game in normal time. Oliver Gill also, he saved United with a goal in clearance from Sam Sheridan's low shot. And Bolton just were all over us. But they couldn't find a winner. And, well, penalties ensued. Bolton, though, missed their first two spot kicks. And United scored their first two. And then Bolton scored the next three. And then the hero was Bolton keeper Rob Layton, who managed to save from Ryan Tunnicliffe, Paul Pogba and Cameron Stewart to give Bolton the victory. So a dramatic evening to say the least, and one that would have your heart racing. But it was good to see Paul Pogba getting a start as well and getting on the score sheet. And he did play well. And Nicky Adjose, who looks to have sort of stepped up into the reserves again. And Magnus Ekram, set piece specialist. I mean, you can't say much more than that. But it's a patched up reserve side, but they've done themselves proud.
Great stuff. And Dov, Mr. Mujak, we'll try and get hold of him for either next week or the week after. Hopefully he'll be about during the Christmas period to fill us in, maybe on a bit on Paul Pogba, so we can get more of an idea of sort of style of player he is. But let's move on now to look at your legends profile, Dov. Who have you got this week?
Well, this week, Steve, I have a special player. I have Tommy Taylor, who is... Well, he's got a lovely nickname. I shall allude to that later. I'll get started. Tommy Taylor, he was born on January 29, 1932 in Barnsley. Started off his life working in a coal mine. He didn't really take to football during his early years. Didn't actually start playing until he was sort of in his late teens. And when he was 17, he was playing for a pub team called Smithies United. And for them, he was scoring a bucket load of goals. And this caught the attention of Barnsley. Barnsley then signed him up quite rapidly after seeing him play, and he made his debut for the Barnsley first team and just couldn't stop scoring for them either. He's played 44 games in all and scored 26 goals, and this sort of enhanced his reputation, and well, a lot of scouts from a lot of teams were beginning to watch him. At this time, so this was the sort of turn of the 40s and 50s, sort of 49, 50, 51. United, obviously, they were rebuilding after their championship win in 1951, 52, as a lot of the players were quite old and were having a lot of trouble finding a goal scorer. But Matt Busby, to his eternal wisdom, decided to take a plunge into the transfer market as opposed to sticking with homegrown players. And he sent his scout Jimmy Murphy to watch Taylor in one of Barnsley's matches. And basically Taylor came back and said that there was more scouts, managers, chairmen from other clubs watching Tommy Taylor than there would be at a general meeting of the Football League. So this is how highly rated this young player was. But basically, after we were given permission to speak to him, one of the hardest jobs was trying to persuade Taylor to come to Manchester. Because he was settled at Barnsley, it was his hometown, playing for his hometown club, lived at home. He didn't really want to leave, and he was a modest guy. But it was Matt Busby who basically managed to persuade him to come and play for Manchester United. Basically, sold him the fact that he'd be playing for a young side, full of like homegrown players, and that if he did join United, he could achieve anything as a player. So. Eventually, we did buy him for, we were going to buy him for £30,000, which in 1953, when we signed him, was a stupid amount of money. The British transfer record at the time was £35,000 that Sheffield Wednesday paid for a player by the name of Jackie Sewell from Notts County in 1951. But Sir Matt Busby, he didn't want to make Taylor a £30,000 player. He didn't want to give him that burden. So what he did was... when we were signing him, he took out his wallet, pulled out a £1 note and handed it to the lady who was serving the tea, and then the transfer went ahead for a sum of £29,999, and that's when we signed Tommy Taylor. He made his debut on Saturday the 7th of March 1953 at Old Trafford against Preston North End, and it was a fantastic performance and a game that we won 5-2. Taylor, he was a big, strong, sort of hard-running forward. He didn't really sort of fill in the normal perception of a forward at that time. He had great movement, fantastic pace. He also was quite graceful when he had the ball. He could play both right, left, left-hand side, up front as well. And he had two great feet, and he was even better in the air. He also had a great temperament. He never let foul play get the better of him. He used to take a lot of stick from defenders. And all he did was he would get back up, laugh about it, and get on with the game. The reason he got his nickname is a journalist at the time for the Daily Herald wrote that it was Tommy, the Smiling Executioner Taylor. And that's what it was, that was then his nickname, the Smiling Executioner, for his temperament and the fact that he scored a ridiculous amount of goals. But apparently it was a set of half's nightmare, to be honest. He was a big, massive guy, pace, like I said, and movement. And Dennis Vierley managed to, so, like, they forced a great partnership together, and like, he laid on a stupid amount of goals for Vierley as well. There's a couple of games that are quite sort of important in Tommy's career. The first one was for England against Brazil on the 9th of May 1956. And Tommy basically just ripped the Brazil defence apart. He scored twice in a 4-2 victory for England, and a game that England also missed two penalties in as well. And basically, they won this because of his running, his strong running, and his aerial threat, and the Brazilians really didn't know how to deal with him. And at that time, Brazil were actually the world champions, so that shows you the sort of the pedigree of the type of player that he was. The second game was for Manchester United. It happened on the 6th of February 1957, not at Old Trafford, at Main Road, against the Spanish champions, Athletic Bilbao. And this was the return leg of the European Cup quarter-final. At the time, United were 5-3 down from the first leg, but we were up for it going into the game, obviously, knew we needed to win. And Taylor, he was opposed by who some have said was one of the best centre-halves at the time, Jesus Garay, playing for Bilbao. Tommy Taylor ran himself into the ground that night. He was everywhere, right, left, always there to get the ball, and basically dragged Garay places where he probably had never been before. Tommy scored United's second goal that night, and in the last 15 minutes, obviously, players were starting to get tired. We were defending a ball in 18-yard area, and basically the ball got cleared to Tommy Taylor, who basically ran. He collected the ball at halfway line, just ran down the touchline. Garay obviously was following him because that was his job for that particular game. Tommy Taylor just ran at him and ran at him, and then so he did a little jink, dropped his left shoulder, and then moved off to the right hand side. Garay went to get the ball, and it wasn't there. Tommy then put in a cross, sort of went into the penalty spot sort of area, and it found him the smallest person in United's team, which is Johnny Berry, who was just running into this ball at full speed, smashed it on the volley with his right foot, and it just put bullet into the back of the net. Obviously, Main Road erupted for the right reasons, United scoring, and Tommy Taylor went mental. And Garay, who, like I say, was one of the best defenders in the world at the time, he said that Tommy Taylor was the best centre-forward he'd ever played against. Briefly mentioned some of the statistics. For United, he played 191 games, scored 131 goals, which is a phenomenal strike rate. And for England, he played 19 games and scored 16 goals, so he was a consummate goal scorer. However, it was part of the Busby Babes team, and tragedy did strike in Munich. He was one of the players that died at age 26 years old, so he still had the prime of his career left. But I mean, imagine how many more goals he would have scored and how many more trophies would have won. He only won two Division 1 titles during his time as a player. But just his nickname, just the general demeanour and the way he played the game, was a fantastic servant to the club. And, well, what can you say? A legend of Old Trafford.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, it's preview time now on the redcafe.net podcast, and we've got a couple of games coming up this week. We'll start with the fixture against Wolves on Tuesday in the Premier League. Dan, can't really afford any more slip-ups, can we now? And it gives us another chance to move level on points with Chelsea, because I believe they play on Wednesday. So surely we'll get the 3 points. And do you expect a lot of changes from the side that lost to Villa?
No, I think you'll play a pretty similar team, quite a similar teammate out there. But I mean, I think that the fact that, I mean, Wolves beat Spurs at the weekend, didn't they, away from home, so they'll be confident. But I think we should have too much to beat Mick McCarthy's men, really. I mean, the only one thing I would say is the fact that I'm getting a little bit worried about Arsenal now, and obviously they're putting pressure on us. I mean, they're only 3 points behind us with that game in hand as well. So we can't really afford to slip up anymore. Because if we do, we're going to get, well, we'll find ourselves in third position, never mind second.
And Dov, Ryan Giggs, BBC Sports personality, a year now, obviously. He's a doubt, isn't he? Because he came off, I think it was a hamstring injury on Saturday. Does that mean Gabriel Obertan possibly in for a start?
I think so, yeah. I think Obertan will get a start. I think Park will actually play again as well to try and get his fitness up. Going with sentiments, what we said before, I'd like to see Nani get a game, to be honest. I think after Wolfsburg, I think he deserves another game. And I think maybe his sort of time in the cold, it's kind of self-imposed. I think he's maybe learned his lesson now. Don't do that again. Just give him a chance, see if he can do anything against Wolves, who I think we should beat. I mean, the last time they won at Old Trafford was in 1980, I think. So going by the weekend, that record might go, but I'd put my mortgage on it and stay intact after the game. Well, I'm delighted to welcome James Tizard from Cottage Corner, which is the forum on the official Fulham website. James, welcome to the redcafe.net podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. We do like to get our opposition fans on to see what their opinions are and see how much they think United are going to beat them by. So it's a pleasure to have you here. Right, we'll get started to get your opinions on, see what's happening with Fulham, Man United in the game and stuff like that. First, I want to sort of ask you about Fulham's season. How you feel it's going. I believe you're ninth in the league as well. And have you qualified for the next stage of the Europa League as well? I mean, how do you think the season's going?
Sure. I mean, with regards to the Europa League, we've got a game on Wednesday night against Basel. We need to win that game to get through to the next stage. So we still need to do a bit of work in Europe to progress. The season as a whole has been, in my eyes, and I'm sure most Fulham fans' eyes, has been another success, mirrored quite closely with what we did last season. We started off strong at home. The away record has been not ideal, but with the strong defence that we have, we've been picking up points away from home. Burnley on Saturday would be a good example of that. And just again, the foundations are there for another promising season under Roy Hodgson, who's done absolute wonders since joining the club.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite a big fan of Roy Hodgson. He's quite an underrated English manager. Obviously, he's well travelled and stuff like that. I think he's brought a lot of that to your team. What are your opinions on him as a manager?
Yeah, I mean, he's not one to chop and change. He's very loyal to his players. I think last season we used about 16 players in the league as a total. I think for any Manchester United fans wondering what team we'll put out, have a look at the team we put out against Burnley. I don't think he'll really change much from that. But he's built steadily a good squad, and there's a system that works well for us. It's hard working, but it can be attractive football at times, and I think he's done well for us. And as you said, he is underrated, but I think slowly but surely he's getting the recognition here, which I think he has elsewhere in the continent, really.
Yeah, it definitely does. And also, you mentioned the squad there. How are you managing to balance playing in Europe, because the Europa League's got quite a hefty schedule, with the sort of Premier League as well? I mean, he's balancing that okay, or?
Yeah, it was a fear at the start of the season. We did wonder about it. Some fans, some Fulham fans, a rather negative ones, if you ask me, pessimistic ones, thought we would struggle. But we've done quite well. I mean, we bought quite a few what would describe as squad players in the summer. Jonathan Greening being one, Bjorn Arne Riise being another, Stephen Kelly, the right back. And we've been able to manage it quite well. I don't think we've showed signs of fatigue at all. I think the Europa League, the only negatives really have come out of it, probably the two games against Roma where we conceded at home a last minute equaliser, and that result would have put us through really. And in the away game we were 1-0 up, and a couple of referee indecisions, a couple of red cards, as a couple of our players really held us back. I mean, if it wasn't for that, I think more psychologically it's been damaging rather than physically to our players. But I think we've been managing quite well. I think after our last match against Sofia, which we won, we managed to back it up with a win at home against Sunderland. So we've been doing all right managing both competitions this season.
What are your opinions on Bobby Zamora getting an England call-up?
For many reasons, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, first things first, I don't think he's good enough. The second reason would probably be Capello. He seems pretty loyal to his squad that's got him there. I'd be absolutely amazed if Bobby Zamora's mentioned in any squad. As I said before, I don't think he's good enough. He's a particularly unpopular player, should I say, with the majority of Fulham fans. I don't think, from what I understand, I mean, most fans wouldn't want him in the team, wouldn't want him in the squad. Probably a bit more riled from the celebration against Sunderland after his goal, which was controversial and, not the sort of thing you want from one of your players. And I think that's really come across from the Fulham fans that I speak to, and I speak to quite a few. They're not happy with him. And, yeah, I think an England call-up is, yeah, a long way off, I'm afraid.
Out of the question.
Yeah, out of the question. And by the way, he was called up to the Trinidad and Tobago squad a couple of months back, and he had to pull out for an injury, so I'm not too sure what's going on there either. So it's a tricky one.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions to be answered there. Talking about, that's one of your players. Me and some of the other United fans that will be listening sort of know who your kind of standout players, and is there anybody in particular that we should be worried about come the weekend?
I think in an attacking sense, you play with two wingers. There'll be Clint Dempsey and Damien Duff. With Damien Duff is obviously a name that Manchester United fans will be well accustomed to over the years at Blackburn and Chelsea and Newcastle. But he's actually still a half-decent player. He looks a changed player from his time at Newcastle with us. He plays on the right wing, so he cuts in quite a bit onto his left foot. But he's actually looking the player he was when he first joined Chelsea. And I think that's a player who maybe a lot of clubs looked at the summer and thought, well, maybe we won't take him. And I was one of them when we bought him. I thought, well, maybe not the best signing. But he's actually turned out to be one of the better signings. So I think he's definitely someone to look out for. And Clint Dempsey as well, who will play on the right-hand side. Difficult player, tricky player. Not the most skillful, but he gets himself into the position, has a good shot from the long range, and is always a decent player. He scored against Liverpool this season and scored a couple against Chelsea last season. So he's got a bit of background scoring against the big four clubs. The two wide men.
Two wide men, good stuff. We shall look out for them. And do you think you could maybe take advantage of the injury crisis with said wide players that we're sort of having at the minute? I mean, Aston Villa seem to do the business at the weekend. Do you think you could have a little go as well?
I think we will do. I mean, we obviously won this fixture last season where I think Manchester United got a couple of players sent off. I think we can exploit it. But that said, I'm sure the Wolfsburg players a couple of weeks ago thought it was a much more injury-ravaged team then, and they weren't able to break you down. So I've got a feeling that we're going to struggle. We're not going to go hammer and tong at a defence against a team who can counter-attack as well as Manchester United. So I wouldn't be expecting us to highlight any weaknesses in your defence. And as I said, there's a good few days before the start of the match, so hopefully, for a Manchester United sake, they'll have a few more players back. But I saw on the weekend Vidic played, Wes Brown played, Never played, and to be honest, whoever plays right back is a solid enough defence to keep us out.
I hope we do. Another question. If there's one United player you could have at Fulham, money, no object at all, who would it be, and what are your reasons for that?
Oh, any Manchester United player. Obviously, a player like Vidic is a good player, but I think our central defensive partnership, Hughes and Hageland, are pretty good, so I wouldn't need to strengthen there. Probably have to say Rooney. It's probably the easiest answer to give, but to be quite honest, I think when you watch him play for Manchester United, he's become that talisman. He is the main focal point of the attacking threat that Manchester United have. I would expect him to be the player that I would take, but maybe that's a bit of a stereotypical answer to give, but I think he's one of the best players in the world, so, and certainly Manchester United's best player, so I wouldn't mind having him.
Not bad, he's quite a popular choice.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Before we let you go, James, I've just got to get a quick prediction off you. What do you think the score will be at the weekend?
Again, I'm more of a realist than a pessimist, but I think Manchester United, especially after last weekend's result against Villa, I expect them to be shoring things up. I'd begrudgingly say 2-0 to United.
Well, let's hope so, James. Well, it's fantastic having you on. It's a real pleasure.
My pleasure.
And we'll maybe speak to you later on in the season for the return leg.
Yeah, let's hope so. Maybe in the cup.
Good stuff. Well, that was James Hazard from the Cottage Corner. So, thanks very much.
Well, that was a view from the opposition, guys. What about us personally? Really tough place to go, isn't it, Craven Cottage? James alluded to it during his little interview there. We lost there 2-0 last season and finished with 9 men as well. So, Dov, it's going to be a tricky game, but are you confident?
I think it'll be a tricky game. I'm quite sort of an admirer of Roy Hodgson. I think he's done a fantastic job there, and he's a manager that certainly he knows football. He's a great tactician, and I think he'll give us a hard game, especially since they're at home as well. A lot will depend on how we come through maybe the Wolves game with injuries and stuff like that. If we go there with a patched up defence again, maybe a draw. I think Craven Cottage is a tough place for us to go. We always seem to not struggle there, but always seem to make it a bit harder for ourselves when we're there. But I would like to think we could win and keep up the pressure. But I don't know. I think it'll be a really tough match, to be honest.
Dan, do you go along with that draw? I mean, they'll put pressure on us, won't they? They'll be up and at it from the first whistle, and it really is going to be a tough game, isn't it?
I can only apologise for what I'm going to say, but I think we're going to get beat. I don't think we're playing that well. I mean, obviously against West Ham, they're not in the best form, and we sort of waltzed it really. But I mean, against Villa, we just looked inept at being able to break anyone down. And Fulham will do exactly the same thing, I imagine, and look to get us on the counter attack. So whilst I remain hopeful that we'll snatch a win, I can't see us being, you know, dominating, which is a worry really. I think we need some more players, I think, in January, but I'm sure we'll move on to that at some other point.
Dan, I don't think I've ever heard you say that we're going to get beat.
Well, I just think that the way we're playing, and you know, Fulham are in great form at the moment. It's a hard game. It's not a banker, is it?
I agree. I think it's going to be really tough. I'm hoping we'll snatch a draw. I don't think we'll lose, because I'm hoping that we'll have too much firepower up front and we'll be able to sort of counter any deficit that may come about. But yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll come away with the draw. I mean, a win would be an absolute brilliant result considering how well, as Dan just said, they are playing. But yeah, I'll be quite happy with a draw. But that is just about it for episode 19 of the redcafe.net podcast. Do send feedback, comments and questions to podcast@redcafe.net. That just leaves us to say thanks a lot for listening and tune in again for next week's show.